But here we are, instead of being in the house listening to the Minister of Finance, listening to you in the industry. I don't know what you've done to Llewellyn Brown. Really, you must investigate how this came about. Welcome, members, and we will start. And we also welcome our special guests from the local government sector. And that we give over to you and your team to present your report. To give us the highlights of your report. So, yeah.
Thank you, Chair, and the members of the honorable members of the committee. I must indicate that due to the our arrangement at CETA, I'm now the deputy chair. The chairperson was delayed and he missed the flight. But he is in Cape Town already, has arrived. I'm sure he's trying to find his way this time. So he thought that we couldn't wait for him at the airport. We should. He's still the treasure. So maybe just to briefly the CEO will take. I'm just introducing the issues, and the CEO will take us through the whole matter. Yeah, the issues here is that the midterm changes of the in terms of the chairperson is not here. He will be coming. The under review had its success stories and difficulties. One of the major highlights was the process undertaken by the CETA with its strategic partners, namely the DPLG, the National House of Traditional Leaders, and SANGA on training and development of traditional leaders. This section of governance has in the past not been fully supported and funded accordingly on matters of training and development that is accredited and which would lead it to a recognized qualification. Following the CETA's presentation to both the portfolio committee and the select committee of provincial local government early in 2006, a special plea was made by members of these committees that the LGCT must undertake all necessary measures towards the development and training of traditional leaders. For the LGCT to achieve this challenge, a consultative process was undertaken with National House of Traditional Leaders and each provincial houses in the form of workshops whereby the traditional leaders raised the following training needs on local economic development, on community development, the computer training, land use and mineral rights, conflict resolution, which I think, as far as they are concerned, those are the critical issues that they needed to be trained on and around for them to interact fully with both communities and the local government sector. Listed above are some of the few training needs extracted from the LGCT report, which detailed the workshops conduct with both the National House and Provincial Houses, and the report impression is readily available from the LGCT website. The CETA also applies itself for the work done on development of the following learnerships that will be implemented in the next financial year, the municipal finance and QF level 5 and 6. Emergency service operations. The above mentioned qualifications could not have been successfully developed if it were not for assistance and commitment of the following strategic partners: the Institute of Municipal Finance Officers, the National Treasury, the German Technical Corporation, and SAIS. In an attempt to coordinate training and development within the sector, the LGCT has entered into a memorandum of understanding with these strategic partners, namely DPLG and SANGA, to ensure that the cohesive coordination approach on training, in order to eliminate the Sanders approach by strategic partners. Similar approach with other institutions and foreign donors are pursued to realize the above mentioned initiatives. When this sector collection to be held in the first quarter of the financial year 2007 is expected to provide a strategy in assisting municipalities and the government to respond to the sector's skills, challenges, and merge with a common agenda on areas of priority, including ASCISA. The best practice models, appropriate training and capacity building interventions based on various alternative delivery options and models. In conclusion, I'd like to thank the authority stakeholders, the CEO, and of course, our report. The colloquium that we are talking about has already taken place as scheduled in the first quarter of this year, where a number of stakeholders were engaged, and one thing for sure for us was that it created a platform where, for the first time, you know, CETA began to interact with a number of stakeholders in terms of discussing its programs and expectations. Thanks, sir.
Thanks, sir. So I'm not going to take long time. I need to greet all the members. I'm just going to go quickly through the report because we make sure that you get it in good time. So we are here for the questions more than the talking. As the chairperson has already rightfully pointed out, that the period under review has been a change in strategy. We did change our strategy in line with the new NSTS 2010. With more emphasis with the development and implementation of short skills strategies, because our view has been that to solve part of the municipality's problem is not to put everybody in a classroom for protracted periods of time, but come up with short skills strategies which incrementally would lead to a qualification. Our highlight has been some of the initiatives that turned into success stories that support the existence of the CETA within the sector. And during the period under review, this is evident through programs and initiatives that I'm going to state below. On the area of sector skills planning, we are required to do that on an annual basis, to do a review of our sector skills plan in terms of the Act. And we have to update the skills list, the critical skills list on an annual basis, and that sector skills venture really informs our initiatives. It becomes an empirical basis from which we depart as a CETA, and that we have successfully completed last year, and we did present to you. So last year we had a lot of interaction, so some of the information will be repetitive because we have a better advantage than other people. We had to put it in the report. And the additional highlights of the 2006-07 SSP process have been the direct engagement of the sector with the skills planning processes and the linkage of the sectoral skills planning more closely with the provincial growth and development strategies through our provincial planning workshops. What we try to do really in terms of this, we're looking at what is the direction of province in terms of investment, in terms of growth planning, and what are the skills that are required in municipalities to support that initiative, and we really honed in on that. And through these workshops, we held in most provinces, our sample was wider than normally was 5, but we this time went up to 7 provinces. There was a beginning to reflect the provincial priorities that link more closely with the skills required to implement the IDP at the municipal level. Though Jonathan speak to it, our assessment around the evaluation of IDPs is a bit of a problem currently, both by GPLG and the provincial GPLG. That's something that we're inputting to it through our M&E forum that GPLG is driving. Then the 2006 therefore process identified these areas, which is infrastructure and service delivery, municipal financial viability, community-based planning and participation.
The issue in our meetings is I don't allow people to use acronyms, even if you assume they are supposed to be known.
the way you see it, M and E on your tongue, you know, like.
Sorry, let's use them properly. So that
the pudding size, our chairperson to use size.
Okay.
I don't know what I have to say for now. I'm still going back to that thing first. By the way, can I give that?
Okay.
So, you help me when you say it out loud.
Yeah. All right, sir. The M&E is the Monetary Evaluation Framework of the and SAIS is the Institute of Fire and Rescue of South Africa. So, Cherry came with that plan that we need to focus more on infrastructure and service delivery, right up to ABET. Community-based participation and planning is an area that includes traditional leaders, ward committees, community development workers, councillors. And incidentally, yesterday, we launched the ward committee training based on the qualification that has been registered. It was launched by the Deputy Minister, Nomakhala Hangana, in the Eastern Cape. And we had 4,000 people there in Satahai, small, and it was well attended and well received. These, Chair, are the areas that we've identified, and we're saying that under each project, it may be small, under infrastructure and service delivery, I'm just going to focus on that. And the kind of projects that we are engaging in are infrastructure asset maintenance. You will see in that direction also we're beginning to develop a qualification. It is a process that was started by DPLG last year, piloting a number of municipalities. And we can just explain during question time if you want to know about that. And we're saying that around issues of infrastructure and infrastructure asset management and maintenance, to get the requisite skill in municipalities, we don't have to get everybody to a class, but there are modes of delivery. We can either RPM people who are there, who've been doing it, or we can get them through a learnership, which is a greenfields process. Those who are aspiring or are performing the function but don't have the technical know-how, we can get them through the learnership. And some of the areas are overarching in terms of internships, where you have learners that have been to this program, and the prospect of employment by municipality for exposure, we do also provide an internship with a view to get them placed. And some of these areas relate to the current apprenticeship or artisan training. I'm not going to go through each and every one of them, Chair. The principle is the same. On the issues of counselors, we have also developed three qualifications. The one qualification was registered last week called Counselor Practices at NQF Level 4, which we will be rolling out next year. With the Leadership Development Program for Counselors, we had a Management Leadership Development Program, which is a skills program coordinated by SAUGA, which we and delivered by University of Pretoria, where we got 398 senior officials and counselors last year. I'm sure SAUGA did report on that also in the MLDP. We do have another program on leadership, not the leadership development, leadership, where we're running jointly with SAUGA and the Swedish Development Agency, SIDA. We have currently taken counselors, senior counselors in all the provinces. The last group was in Sweden a month ago, where they do a one-year training program, 6 months in South Africa, 2 months in Sweden, and the rest is practical work on, it's called LODLOG, Leadership, Local Democracy and Local Governance. DPLG is running a similar program called LOGOLA. We're trying to collapse the two programs because the objectives of the programs are the same, and the exit qualification is the same qualification that we're using for both the programs into one program. Chair, I have already spoken about traditional leaders, so I'm not going to focus more on that. These are some of the skills that the Chair highlighted, a few of the skills that the traditional leaders felt they needed to be trained on, Chair. We have also brought in material for you, the two programs that will be starting with the one on leadership in community development and leadership in economic development, which we will leave the copy. We did give Honorable Member Nongonyan a copy to deliver to you. I don't know whether it came, but in case it did not. Okay.
these programs are based on standards and qualifications. I must just say, Chair, in that area, we have finalized the rollout process. We will be giving money, the 5 million we've set aside. We are giving the discretionary grants to the provincial governments, either Premier's Office or the Department of Local Government and Housing, to procure the accredited training providers. We accredited the training providers, will be giving them the money they have to procure from the list that we give them. The person they think is will be more competitive in terms of delivering the program. So we're not directly involved with the procurement process. Part of that is that we want everybody to take ownership. We do have provincial steering committees that will monitor the implementation process. The same applies to counselor training, the same would apply to ward committee training. The highly specialized areas, Chair, is issues of human rights that the traditional leaders were looking at, issues of justice. There are issues between the Department of Justice, issues of jurisdiction, issues of the rights of traditional leaders to preside over criminal cases and so forth. On ABET, Chair, it remains one of the areas where we need to train a number of people. Last year, you remember, we came back and we brought last year's annual report because there was a request from members that we'd want to see what we reported last year going forward, if there is progress or there is a lack of progress. And you see that last year we had 13,359 people entering at NQF level 1 and 2. And which was a great intake. But this year, in the year under review, we had only 2,539, which is a new intake. And those are the demographics in terms of the number of contracts issued and the total number of learners. Of that 2,539, 840 is women. Interestingly, we also have noted that we would need to get involved with ABET for ward committee members, for them to be able to access further learning. Some of them we will be doing a detailed scoping to establish how many of them can read and write, how many of them can speak one of the languages that are used as a medium of instruction, to enable them to understand issues of legislation and so forth. So we will also be undertaking ABET for ward committees. Because we work in this space that was largely contested here, we did a review of the professional bodies that are functioning in the sector. You know that INFO was a professional body that prescribed accounting standards before the advent of the MFMA. So all the municipalities were using INFO standards, and as such, INFO standards were not linked to the current accounting standards. And National Treasury could not make sense of it. So the budgeting frameworks were different. Everybody has moved now into the GAAP and the GRAP standards as prescribed by the Accountant General and as required by the MFMA. However, we realize that a professional body like INFO has played a major role in inputting the development of some of the programs, and that's why we call them our strategic partner in providing quality assurance expertise in some areas, managing projects for us, in other areas giving technical input in the development of qualifications and standards. So we did that with all the other professional bodies, and there is a report that we can make available also. The issue that we were grappling with is the issues of transformation around some of these bodies. The engineers are very horrible because they are predominantly male and predominantly white, unfortunately. So is the accounting profession. And there are issues that we are addressing with them whilst we need the strategic partnership. This slide, Chair, is about demographics, distribution of training interventions. In the sector, this information we extracted from the annual training reports for last year, and you'll see that on management and leadership, we took a sample of 2%, Most of them need project management and planning, client services, zero, finance, 1%, corporate and legal. So you can go through that statistic at your own leisure or during question times, we will be able to respond to that. Discretionary grant funded strategic projects. With the advent of the Municipal Property Act, Property Valuation Act, and we've set aside 7.5 million to train municipal valuers. We've spoken at length about this at our previous presentation. We have to date awarded all the papers with and the Council for Property Valuers is managing that program for us. We're using UNISA as one of the providers and two others, and Janet will remind me who are the other higher education training providers. The center with the Institute for Civil Engineers. There was a great need in 2005 and 2006, and it was also established from the SSP. We have awarded two bursaries. It's mostly interns in the municipalities, and we do also have a list. I must just indicate here that in these areas, the bursaries range between 30 and 50,000. These are expensive, very, very expensive programs. On the labor intensive projects, it's a project that we started in 2005 and 2006 with construction sector. The qualification is a construction sector qualification. And the initial number that we were looking at was training people on skills program. It was 1,200. There was a need, we've extended that program to train 2,100 technicians. It's lower level engineering or technical skill. I will share one point that we need to demystify also. We have discovered that there is a misinterpretation of what type of skills are required in local government, particularly technical skills. And when we interacted with GIPSA, for instance, the way issues where people are saying there are no engineers in municipalities or there's a lack of town planners in municipalities. But the truth of the matter is not, it's not the engineers, but it is the engineering skill. So people do not look at the whole spectrum of the skills required. But our view is that an engineer does not dig a hole. He can design a trench and determine how a pipe should be laid and so forth. But somebody, you need a lower level of skill to get there. The same with the town planning. So that's what we did through that program, and these are a number of learners that we enrolled in the program for the year under review. And that is a provincial spread. You see that Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and Eastern Cape have got the highest numbers. Yeah, followed by Western Cape, yes. That's the same number, continues on level 7, that one was on level 5. I'm just trying to get away from the narrative chain. Llewellyn's project has just reduced everything to a font that I don't understand. I'll go to the annual report. So we developed, in order to implement learnerships, we developed qualifications. And those qualifications, the one is the qualification for CDWs. There is an NQF level 3 now. It's a development practice qualification. I need to indicate that we currently are not the custodian of the qualification, though we've developed the qualification. So this is a transversal qualification. It applies to the field of development practice. And it can culminate up to social work and the likes. So it's with each of these sites, but we've developed the qualification, and we are the ones that are implementing the qualification at that level. On municipal admin and finance, NQF level 4, that is meant to capacitate all the people working in finance. By 2013, Treasury has issued a circular saying everybody who works in a municipal finance department, there's a list of 13 competencies that they need to possess, and we've developed these qualifications in line with that. What we're hoping to do with that qualification is to RPL 11,000 municipal workers working in finance. That's the number that we've been given with by National Treasury. And most of it will be more really RPLing people who are already on the job. I won't go through all the qualifications, safe to say, I'm just highlighting those that are critical where we're doing something. The proposed qualifications change, those qualifications are qualifications that have been identified through a need. We either approach by a government department or by municipalities themselves to request that we look at the development of those qualifications. On the apprenticeship, we currently have 1,373 artisans. Some of them are artisans on learnership program, like on the wastewater and waste process operators. Some of them are artisans who are currently on the old apprenticeship system, which we did not discontinue. You remember, Chair, that we were a training board before, established in terms of the Manpower Training Act, so we're still discharging the artisan training. Then next year, we will report that we have been tasked by the department to chair the committee for CITAS on artisan development, and we have been given access to funding to the tune of 50 million, the one that due diligence conducted, to implement our proposal on artisan development in the municipalities. Part of our process is to build the capacity of municipalities themselves that existed before in implementing this artisan training, what we would call our Institute of Sectoral Occupational Excellence, ISOEs. Traditional leaders, Chair, are very popular. They feature more than twice in our annual report. For some reason, I'm going to skip them and ward councillors. I'm going to interview Chair. You see, I'm going very fast. Our other mandate as a CETA is to be a quality assurer of education. We have a second level accreditation from SAQA. So anybody who provides education and training within the sphere of local government, be it in the general education and training band, further education or higher education, must get either rating from us in terms of the content of the program. Higher education, normally say we get our programs to be approved by the Senate, and we are deemed to be accredited, we don't need to go through that. What we normally do, we found that previously, higher education, even federal education institutions, were churning out programs that were not relevant to municipalities and not aligned. With COHE, which is the HQA for higher education, and UMALUSI for further education, we've had a discussion that we need to ensure consistency, that we need to work jointly with them to bring the higher education sphere back into complying with legislation. And we find that a lot of them are coming on board now. University of Pretoria is one, VETS on the municipal finance, UNISA on the CGW roads. So we find that there's more collaboration, they're prepared to collaborate now. But also our view, Chair, was that for us to be able to deliver on our mandate, because local communities have lots of challenges, we need to leverage on the capacity of public sector training providers. On our own, we cannot be able to achieve it. And more so that we don't have specialized training providers in the field of local government, and those that are emerging don't have the capacity to deal with the numbers. So our milestone has been that within our primary focus, what we call primary focus is an area where we give in responsibility for qualifications. We did develop the qualification of ward committees and the other qualifications that are listed in the earlier schedule. Milestones, Chair, regarding the ETQA function was the performance of the quality assurance. We also get audited by SAQA on an annual basis as to whether we are able to quality assure the provision of education and training, whether we are able to moderate the assessments, whether we are able to upload the achievements of the learners on the National Learner Registration Database. We also did look at building the capacity of providers. We engaged on a number of training programs for which we put in money, accreditation of providers, quality management system for providers, training of assessors, moderators, mentors and coaches. transformation of the assessment of the apprenticeship system transformation thereof. That the assessment procedures, you know that when you are an API, you become cheap labor and you don't get to qualify in the long term. So we're looking at the assessment procedures used in the current African training on the apprenticeship system to align them to the one that we are doing, the Technical Skills Development Act. And of course, the training of RPL practitioners. I'm not getting to the number of accredited providers. These are most of them, some of them would be providers that are established or are accredited with other ETQA bodies, but a bulk of them would be emerging providers that we've accredited in the year under review. And you'll see Free State only has 4 that have met the requirements. Gauteng has 19. Western Cape and KZN have got 10. And Mpumalanga, no accredited provider. Let me just indicate here that what our problem is, and I'll explain when I get to the finances. We also find that the absence of accredited providers with municipal content is hampering our initiative to implement programs. For instance, last year we gave municipalities 42 million rand on a pilot project, the framework agreement. It took a year for municipalities to finally comply, you know, to get a provider, a suitable provider. Only 17 million rand of that money has been used a year later, as of yesterday. The bulk of the money, there's no capacity in the municipality to utilize them because of the absence of providers. That's the one. There are other issues, but largely just the absence of providers. In some instances, municipalities were saying, why don't you procure a provider for us? You look for a suitable provider, you pay the provider. We say, no, we want to make sure that we build the capacity of municipalities to be learning centers. If we do assume responsibility, then we perpetually will be dependent on us and not want to do this. So that's part of that. But also, we also have our own capacity challenges. We cannot undertake huge projects and manage them centrally on our own. We have trained assessors as a way of supporting workplace training. We have trained assessors, what we call constituent assessors, moderators. We've trained 900 of them to be able to provide workplace assessment on most of those qualifications where we are implementing. And we've trained them not only as assessors but as mentors and coaches. The project is coming to an end now, Chair. After we've trained them, they have to register as workplace assessors or mentors on our registration database, and we upload them on SAPA, and we use them also to provide a workplace assessment in municipalities that have 14 people where training programs are running. We do have such small municipalities. This is just a spread, so you'll see by province. Of assessors and moderators, you can see that the number is still significantly small, but the balance of them are trained in this financial year, so we will report on that next year. Monitoring and evaluation, Chair. We did embark on, we took stock of how much money we've spent on programs in the previous 5 years of the CSAS existence, from the days of the LGW CSAS. And last year we did indicate that we spent a lot of money in dispersing funds back to our training. We've discovered through the MNE, monitoring and evaluation of accredited, that municipalities really were not engaging accredited training providers. Or where providers were engaged, providers were not delivering programs of up to standard. We also discovered that in the other instances where providers were not paid, and hence they could not give us an assessment report, only when at our intervention, they will say, no, we did not claim money from you, so they will have to claim money from us to be able to pay providers. So those are issues of capacity in the workplaces. But we were putting the onus on the training providers themselves, particularly those that we've accredited, to be able to report back to us and say, you know, we are not able to implement this qualification in a particular for these reasons. And only when we did that, we discovered a whole range of issues. Part of this chair was not only to audit against compliance by providers, we now extending that program towards measuring impact for the money that we spend on a number of training programs. So these are the providers that have been monitored, those that are accredited by provinces. This is just a spread. We try as much as possible to share to give you geographic spread, because we heard you last time that you'd want to see by province. Okay. The other point Janet will speak to, I'm just going to, is that disaggregated information that we now have, which we would want to have a workshop on, because the detailed information on equity and on a whole range of issues. In the year under review, sure, we certificated at 1,013 learners. Those are learners that are, and we've uploaded them on the NLRD, those are learners that were on programs of the LGCTA. This is a program that is driven by the LGCTA, but the qualifications is in another EQQ, we don't report on it. These are only qualifications that are qualitatively assured by us. And this would also exclude the CDW, which is an ETDP CETA qualification in terms of ETQA responsibility. And it also excludes the program, the MLDP program for the 398 SALDA councillors and senior officials, whose responsibility we delegated to the university. So we would not have that number here. And the one on the municipal finance, the first cohort that we delegated to VETS. So we're only reporting on those, but we still are doing an upload, and we will report next year on the number of uploads. On marketing and communication, Chair, we have tried to increase the profile of the CETA. A whole range of initiatives we are undertaking through the provincial graduation ceremonies, the provincial summit of the CETA, and in this first quarter of this year, that process culminated in us having a colloquium. We're also interacting with our stakeholders, constituent stakeholders, you know, through their various seminars, workshops, conferences, you know, to begin to say this is what the CETA is all about, these are the products that we offer. And also try in that to define what their role is, because we found, and the chairperson can attest to that an ordinary shop steward does not know what his relationship with the CETA is. Among things that they agitate for, training becomes a last issue. You know, it's about unfair dismissal and a whole range of issues. And we feel that in order to assist our stakeholders also to get there, we need as a CETA to begin to drive that process and say, note that SAMU and IMATU and SALGA are not only shareholders, are not only stakeholders in the CETA, but are 50% shareholder each. If they have dividends to be secured, they've got more vested interest. So it is incumbent upon them to ensure that the CETA succeeds, because it is their institution. Without SALGA, without the two unions, there's no CETA, basically. So, however, we realize that the focus of unions is something else, and we should use, therefore, our ability as a CETA on our own to go down to those levels. And I must say that the support has been overwhelming, and the reception that we got from the stakeholders overwhelming. What we are doing maybe in that respect here, we finalize the MOUs, the stakeholders to them. We finalize the MOU with SALGA. It will be going to the NEC of SALGA now for just ratification. We finalize. Because we said to SALGA, there have been areas of overlap and contestation between ourselves, SALGA, and DPLG. We need to clarify. We clarified with DPLG what our intervention to our MOU last year. The same we are doing with SALGA. And we said our analysis is that SALGA must play a key role towards advancing the skills, capacity of everybody in the area of public participation, councillors, ward committees, traditional leaders, because this country, each is covered by one or other municipalities, and there are issues of interrelationship. We think that SALGA can fulfill that role much, much better. We're not saying we've exclusively limited them to that, but also issues of senior management leadership programs, they have a role to play, they coordinate and drive. With the total realization now, from my discussion with the DG and the CEO Saga, that perhaps DPMG should play much more of an oversight, regulatory support role, rather than trying also to replicate or duplicate some of the programs that Saga is running, so that from the citizen side we can make available resources, funding, as we are doing with the skills audits and other programs. So that's what we are doing as part of our marketing and communication. I must say it's beginning to pay dividends. Around the structure of the CISA chair, we do have the board, we have an exco, and they are required to meet the board twice a year in terms of the CISA constitution. The exco must meet at least four times, and the exco is supported by those committees, HR committee, audit committee, Leadership ETQA Committee, SSP, and those committees are committees of EXO. They look at implementation of programs, they suggest new programs to EXO, and they meet also at least four times a year. This is the mandate of the authority chair. I'm not going to go through it in terms of its constitution. I also need to say that the constitution of the CISA is a legal document. It is gazetted. Formally gazetted, and our constitution was gazetted on the 3rd of February last year. I can't remember the gazette number. These are our board members, Chen. You can see also the delinquent ones. Sorry, sir. That is public knowledge. The number of meetings they attended, and then from the component employer and so forth. May I just say, so that we put this in context, Chen, this number of meetings attended does not reflect the delinquency on the part of our board members. I will speak to that point as I go forward. Last year in particular, we had a problem with the municipal elections. Now, for some reason, every time towards the election, 6 months prior to the election, and I think almost 6 months after the election, there is a lull in local government, because officials and councillors, who are some of our board members, are in a campaign mode. And then thereafter, after the election, depending who has come back, Saga must still deploy. And the NEC, they must elect an NEC, then there's a 6 month lag before we get a vote. So we almost have, like last year, we had a 9 month lag, where all the programs, some of the programs that were approved, were only approved in October 2006 for this financial year we are reporting on. Because the board was only properly constituted in August 2006. So hence the number you see to reflect that therefore the requisite number of meetings did not happen, or other members were not available for either lack of uncertainty whether they are deployed or redeployed, or they have not been re-elected. This is the exco chair, it's same, and here we give you the number of meetings attended and the gender, you know, the equity spread. You see also that our board itself is reflective of the sector, it's still male dominated. If you look at the number of males there, and the number of females, and then in terms of race, also you'll see that it's more African, and only in exco we have one white person. The audit committee is a statutory committee in terms of the PFMA. Last year we had a bit of a problem with the audit committee. Other members resigned, and it took long to reconstitute, to approve, and the audit committee as it's currently constituted was also approved only in November, and it started functioning in January this year effectively. So for that year, whilst the chairperson attended 3 meetings, only one of the 3 meetings corrected. The other committees, Chair, there's no point in talking to them in detail. You can go through the annual report. The CISA Chair also has what we call provincial committees. These are committees of the board. They are in the provinces. They are constituted on the same basis as the board. It's 50% labor, 50% employer, and a government department, DLG or DLGMH in the province. And at the province, they can then also co-opt any other. In some provinces, we have DWARF. In some provinces, we have DOL sitting in the structure on invitation. on human resources, because we are a sitter, we cannot develop people outside. We find that all sitters also have a challenge in terms of the capacity. We also have to train people continuously, but what we find, as we train people, they leave, another sitter approaches them. So you'll find that the employees at the sitters, there's a high staff turnover generally in sitters because we are competing for same skills. But we put, I mean, we have 41 people in the sitter, that's the total staff complement. We put 200,000 to train them across all those areas. This is the staff profile at executive level, executive management. There is one person in chief, it's only the CEO. At senior management, we have five. We have six provincial managers covering nine provinces. We have four senior staff members. We have 16 support staff and one general staff. What we are now doing is to increase our capacity. Here we have a limitation. We can only use 10% of our 170 million budget, which is 17 million rand, and that is to fund development program, offices, all our administration, and 10% is limiting. What we are now doing is to run all our programs as projects, because we can leverage from the discretionary fund additional 10%, and we employ those staff. They will not be reflected yet because they are contract positions. That's how we increase. We are now sitting almost at 60. You know, to get to the requisite capacity to deliver programs. Our view also says that if the machinery runs well at municipalities, we don't need a huge bureaucracy after all. We need to be able to be a catalyst, identify strategic priority areas, identify instruments that we use to develop, you know, appropriate interventions, use third parties, strategic partners like INFOS, the GPLCs and so forth, and then disperse funds and ensure that we have more of a coordinating role and a monitoring function, rather than wanting to build a huge bureaucracy, which we cannot sustain. Chair, I'm coming to the crux now, the finance. I'm not going to speak to the narrative, this is just what the mandate is, what it does. I'm just going to speak to the amount of money that we received in the year under review, and this is the spread by province. You see that the biggest contributor, levy income. I need to indicate here that our levy income, 80% of our total levy comes from eight big employers. It's the six metros, some of the bigger districts, municipalities, and one or two municipal entities. The rest of the municipalities, even if they are not to pay us a levy, what they pay us is so insignificant. And what we are trying to do now, Chair, is to develop a criteria where we can disperse money back. You see, if you've gone through the financials, that we rolling over in this financial year, we have 262 million in the discretionary grant reserve. And we have not taken into cognizance this year's discretionary grants of another additional 40 million. So we'll be sitting at the end of November with about 300 million rand. But there's no capacity in the municipality to absorb that money, so it becomes a bit of a problem. So what we are doing is that the small levy payers, those that pay us 40,000, 60,000, maybe up to 80,000 annually in levies, that we will only get 50% thereof back, subject to having submitted a workplace skill plan and comply. But the 20% that they forfeiting to us in the discretionary fund, that we also automatically pay it back to them. It is one way of moving future funds towards you know, relevant projects in the municipalities, and also keeping more cash in the hands of municipalities, the smaller ones, we're talking about the smaller ones, to be able to implement programs. So you'll see here that KwaZulu-Natal is contributing 20% of the levy last year. It 61 municipalities, one or two of the smaller ones are hardly even paying, and we don't notice it because it's insignificant amounts of money. Western Cape is the second one, Chair, with 18%. Gauteng, of course, remains the biggest levy payer at 31%, because there are three metros in Gauteng, that's the reason. In terms of actual, let me go to this one, actual mandatory grants dispersed, Chair, for the levy year, you see that Gauteng still gets the chunk, and the figures are in the financials, I'm just giving you the 36%, Western Cape 22%, the municipalities in the Western Cape, some of them are well organized in terms of claiming the money back. But we've also increasingly are putting pressure in the municipalities in the Western Cape, Brede Valley, which one is one of Danny Customs. There are a number of municipalities that are doing good work also here, but we're putting pressure, including Cape Town now, to implement the Cape Town life saving, we're sitting with 27 million, for which they said they're not going to use it, so we said bring it back, because they're not playing staff. And in this financial year, while there are issues of contestation, Mr. Maloga, with some, but we've seen an increase in the number of training interventions that have been undertaken. So what we are currently are going to be doing is to go and verify through our MNE whether indeed the people should go through those programs. So which is quite encouraging. So in terms of those grants dispersed, we've seen that there's more compliance now gradually towards utilizing money on training, not on balancing the budget. I'll go to this slide here. What we did share here, in terms of the admin expense versus expenditure on our 10%, we did a 3-year analysis looking back from 2003 to date in terms of our MTF, and you'll see that in 2003 only 84% of the money was spent, both the income versus expenditure admin. And 2003 for 94%, and during question times I can just give you the reasons why. And 2004-05, it's when the CETA was really beginning to push its programs. You'll see that we spent quite significantly. And last year, again, you'll see on the expenses side, it dropped to 84 because of one of the reasons that I've mentioned. And it has picked up again to 90%. These are the actual mandatory grants, research disbursements, and we also tried to do a comparison for 2005-06 levy year and currently. And you'll see there, Chair, that the mandatory grants that the province, that still takes in terms of the graph, it's Gauteng. And Gauteng also is still the highest in terms of disbursements. That was a pie chart, this is just the graph. Okay. As far as the discretionary grants, I've already alluded to the fact that in the previous year, if you refer to our annual report of last year, you will see that we dispersed an amount of 31.5 million on mandatory grants, on discretionary grants. In the year under review, it's 50% less than what we dispersed last year. So there is a problem that you can see because of the reasons that I've already highlighted. What are the highlights here for 2006-07? In summary, it is the SSP review, which I said it provides us with more accurate data. It provides us with a correct empirical analysis of what the problems are in the municipality. This fact, Chair, has also been validated by both the demarcation board and the current DPLG skills audit process, where they said our data is more accurate and more reliable in terms of analyzing some of the problems in the municipality, which is to us a very great compliment. The municipal skills audit which had its own slight problems in the beginning, but it's taken off very well, and we give it to PLG 20 million rand for that process. We are part of the steering committee, and the project on the mandatory grant for property valuers, all those programs that we spoke about, are programs where we think we've invested our money in the correct place. It's areas of critical skills. And of course, the successful completion by 3,505 CDWs, and KZN being the last one to graduate, all of whom have been placed. So I must say that this is a record for us. I'm saying again, the more we interact with the CDW issue, the little did we know that we will have such a high placement record where people are trained in a program and all of them find employment. You find it rare, and to this great number, to the number that we are talking about. And in fact, we thought we would bring you some video footage of a program that SABC did, Journey to a Dream, where they interviewed or they identify one of our CDW, the National CDW won awards. He went to India, just showcasing the work that the CETA did. We didn't commission that program, it's SABC's own initiative. And the work that the CDWs are doing in the communities, it's amazing. We also have, in KZN, we last year implemented a training and learnership for firefighting. And what that program also was showcased by FABC, where we had opportunities for 80 learners, and we had 1,006 learners, unemployed learners, turning up to participate in this fire and rescue learnership, and only 84 managed out of the 1,000, only 84 made it, and 11 of whom are employed by now the airport company in Durban. And then others have been taken by all the other municipalities. We funded that program. It was implemented by Rural Metro. The other highlight here was the scoping of traditional leaders. That we spoke about it. The registration of councillor qualification and ward committee qualification. And of course, the support to SAUDA through this level of program supported by SIDA. As a virtual college, and of course in this financial year, we will report next year that SAUDA has met all the requirements for accreditation as a virtual college, and they will be running with those programs. We will also, some say are saying to GPLG, they are struggling somewhere, somehow, in terms of getting Logona meeting all the accreditation requirements, and we don't feel that a government department should play a role in implementing training. They have to ensure that it happens. And those are the discussions we're having and trying to collapse the two programs between SAUDA and DPLG. The milestone, which is something that we need to pride ourselves with, is the one of the collaboration with National Treasury on the municipal finance management programs. We also have developed with them, through assistance of GCZ, a handbook for municipal finance practitioners. And currently, we're having 400 municipal officials who are participating in that program. They will be graduating in September. VETS was the lead provider then. We also are having the University of Pretoria coming on board. Oh, this September, that's past. So the program has completed. We're looking towards the graduation. We'll be doing the moderation and assessment. I'm still in August. We're also having APSA Bank has come on board with a sponsorship of 1.6 million to train. These qualifications are based on ensuring that the municipal finance practitioners attain the 11 competencies prescribed by National Treasury to work as practitioners. APSA Bank is only providing 1.6 million for 141 municipal finance practitioners, but they're only training them on six competencies because the University of Pretoria only have that competency to, they can only facilitate the six competencies, they still have to step in some skill or collaborate with it. You see also the training providers themselves lack capacity in that area. So it is a skills program, whereas the VETS is running with a full program, the APSA University of Pretoria program is only six modules, six skills programs. I spoke about the certification of learners, Chair, and I've spoken about the stakeholder outreach. Our challenges I've spoken to is the issues of the municipal election that resulted in 60% of the councillors being new. We also did a scoping of those councillors. We do have a report on that. We also have a complete database of all the councillors, what the minimum qualifications are, all the councillors in South Africa. Saga has that, it was a joint project with us and Saga. The thing that really slowed us down last year also, I said there are a myriad of issues, it's the appointment of new section 56-57 managers. You should know maybe better than us, but we felt it because we started with a cohort of municipal managers or senior managers, and in this year when we went back there were totally new people in the municipalities for whatever reasons they were removed. And of course the effect of the deployment I've spoken about, Chair. The low percentage in the disbursement of funds, I've spoken about it. The third part that we're noting is the qualified opinion that we got from the AG. It's the first qualified opinion that we got, and it still remains a contested area. We will engage with the AG in this matter at SCOPA if we are required to go to SCOPA. Because we argue, Chair, that there was no basis for the sitter to be given a qualification. If you go to the annual reports, you'll see the report of the AG, where the basis of the qualification is based on a provision. The issue that we raised is that we've raised the basis we used to determine a provision is the basis that we've used for the last 5 years. There has never been an issue with it. The argument of the AG is that the amount that we raised provision for, it's an amount of 2.5 million, is above their materiality figure, and hence they have to qualify. For the life of me, I don't think that's a logical reason to qualify somebody. But what we've also sadly noted, Chair, and we will provide you that analysis, is that what we are qualified on by the AG, other sitters were not qualified on that. The whole issue was an accounting framework that we're using of an accrual system, and the AG was arguing the issue of completeness of revenue. It's a whole complicated accounting phenomenon. But what it means, Chair, there is no sitter of all the 23 sitters that is able to account for the completeness of their revenue. The reason being simply, SARS is the collecting agent. The sitter could not direct relationship in terms of collecting levies with its clients, the municipalities. The sitter only receives money from GOL, and GOL and SARS have got a service level agreement. Now, if we ask information from SARS, Department of Labor. Sorry, Chair. Our Auditor General, the AG, also the CR, made a the system is that we at times get more money than is entitled, and SARS at times allocate pay-as-you-earn money towards STL or STL towards pay-as-you-earn. So at no point can we say the revenue that we have we can account for as being accurate. So on the framework of what we do, we then raise a provision in case a municipality's levy was short-paid to us or overpaid to us, so we'll put a provision at the end of the financial year. Now what the AG was arguing, they said we should have done a top-line analysis. They wanted to see how we got to that provision. That's the issue that they're arguing. But we say, our view that AG must add value. If for the previous year they are such a basis we're using, they should have created the basis last year. And then they could say, We want to see a trend analysis of the company.
What's their response to that question?
Well, we have a meeting with the AG himself and with Terence to deal with this issue, because we did not get joint chair with the manager. But what we also realize that the AG does not understand how the CETA works, or maybe some of the public entities. They don't understand the core business. I'll just speak to the issues of what they termed irregular expenditure. They raised a whole range of issues, a list of 24 issues where they wanted to qualify us on. And on each and every one of them, we've proven to them that they are wrong. One, they cannot prescribe to us how we should run our business, what they should do. They should determine if we're running our business in terms of our policies, in terms of legislation. So they'll be willing to argue certain things. But what we found also that they brought in intents. They don't have the capacity. So you find that you deal with one intern and another one comes, you give them the same information. I'm sure this is the gripe with everybody of the AG within departments. But it's something that government overall has got to take up with the AG in terms of increasing the capacity of the AG to fulfill its functions. I don't think they are doing justice. That's where you can hear from my tone here that we are deeply aggrieved by a qualification, because it creates certain perceptions. As far as the opinion that the AG expressed on other matters of emphasis, we agree with Chair. In the annual report, it's matters that we are addressing. And on other matters that they reported upon, it's matters that were corrected, which shouldn't have been in the final management letter. I must just indicate, I didn't want to raise this at the Portfolio Committee for Labour. And I don't know if I'm sure you know that. We last year experienced the departure of the finance manager during the preparation of the annual financial statements. So we've had to bring in a consultant to assist us compile the annual financial statements. And it was sabotage on the part of the employee for that reason. But we're not having gripe about the people are entitled to leave. So that's one of the issues that we really don't like to hold it as a challenge, because that's a challenge we should foresee all the time, that people will leave. I think our challenge is to build adequate capacity in the department. It's a lesson that we've learned, that the system must not depend on an individual. We must build requisite capacity to ensure that we are never left in the lurch. So, Chair, those are the issues, and we will take any questions on matters that we've raised and matters, the report of the AG, which is before you on other matters. I can just assure you that notwithstanding the analysis, because if a public entity or a government department gets a qualified opinion, people always formulate their own opinions about maybe there's discourse, there's corruption, there's theft, there's fraud. You know, people, I don't know this whole concept of a qualification is understood, but the media for some reason will blow it out of proportion. I was speaking to another speaker that got a disclaimer, and the chairperson was very happy to get the disclaimer. She said, it's better we got the disclaimer, it's better than a qualification. I don't know whether he understood the disclaimer was worse than the qualification. But I said, I must have learned it upon this. I don't want to disappoint you. Thank you, Chair.
Members, there is the report. Welcome, Chairperson. There's the report. Any comments, questions? Yes, Mr.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I should start with the last one. I think I must just comment, Chairperson, that I think there is still is a challenge, and maybe for GPLG also, to look into this, because the issue of the Auditor General and this change in terms of the format they use. I'm just saying something that I know, Chairperson, that you'll be engaging on as committees during the course of this week. Maybe what one should suggest in terms of the statement or the objection that has been registered by the CETA, that also we follow up before Thursday, Chairperson. That as well as with the DPLG as to what their comments is.
it's something very complex, exactly, because it has been evident that even in some committees that there's this concern around the systems change. So which I think would maybe for members also require of us to look deeper into the Auditor General's way of doing things, so that without discrediting the office, but to have a better understanding. We are giving ourselves when we have to engage on an approach that is not consistent. You have no consistency in terms of how we engage on the auditors and the rest, but on the performance service. So therefore, going back to the slides, one is aware that I also want to make a general observation that there is this disjunction or a challenge between the CITA's role, and when we go through the DPLG's report about inadequacies or incompetencies that reflect directly on the capacity of municipalities, I think it's one area that we'll have to look into. When we look, for instance, into DPLG annual report, you see so many challenges about the failure of municipalities, including their capacity to access. So I always view or look at training as a problem solver in terms of areas of incompetencies. Like the NIC, for instance, see, and others, there even those that are related to the reporting formats and other things, which I believe that the linkage has to be direct. The other one is a question of the for instance, the reference to page 5 in terms of the 207 SFP process that infers skills gaps over related to infrastructure and service delivery. I think also I just wanted to know how do you cope up with the modernization part. I'm sure you know that in terms of local government, if you go to the townships, for instance, there were plans 30 years ago, whereas the issue of replacement as well as of upgrading is a challenge, and this is meant directly to the very issue of skills, as well as the skills that we have. Now, which I know is a problem, I'm also aware that local government is having a problem even in doing an audit in terms of infrastructure backlog and as well as where it is located. So this is a complex area. One is aware of I think you're on page 6. This was just trying to reflect in terms of the strategic priority areas. But I'm raising this component of modernization, which might even undermine the RTL concept that in our understanding. But I think you put it in order to, you can base on it, because at least the work environment people are accustomed to, as it relates to. And then on the second page, the person, I just wanted to know the impact of the research also. I'm just moving slide by slide. On page 9 also, Professor. Yeah, there are figures that you give him as an intake. I've just written what will the outcome be. Remember some states you said, yes, you can have an intake. More so in terms of training, or you have the easy intake, but still fall out on the way. The dropout rates, which also does affect. And then you have mentioned identified possible areas of mutual collaboration with the various professional bodies. I'm thinking, where are they? So that maybe also linking to what we requested, we said, there's some strange if you to have, say, even a list of some few of these service providers, because The analysis and argument, I'm seeing this correctly in the presence of the chairperson, that municipalities usually use Chapter 3 of the Constitution in terms of their rights, and they can be dictated to by national in terms of what is it that they have to do. Now, they make choices, if you remember, even in terms of identifying. It's only one thing that will come their way at some stage, that then they will say we need support. And which I would believe the person that even the speaker cannot dictate to them, as you have indicated. But in what way do we incentivize? And I think you said the partnership with CALGA is the one that will maybe assist a lot. And then, that's enough, Peterson. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
First of all, we as members of Parliament put a question about what the CETA is doing. You must put it to the Minister of Labour. You answer to the Minister of Labour. And you also make a presentation to that portfolio committee who also look into matters. Now, coupled with that, I would just like to ask you about the memorandum of understanding with DPLG. Just to give us an indication, you know, what is it? I mean, you're not reporting to that minister, but or that department, but you deliver a service to local government under, or the municipalities under that department. So let us just hear what more. Perhaps we can have a copy of that memorandum of understanding. Yeah, that we have it. Chair, then I just would like to refer to the on page L11 of the documents that we went through. Now, the percentage of interventions at municipalities, this is really a shocking figure to my mind. It is pointed out also by the CETA as such, that in private sector, 33% of all employees receive some sort of training intervention. And if we look at local government and the different categories, it doesn't get higher than 4%. Most are 1, 2, 3%. Can you just speak to this a little bit? I mean, this is more or less for me the crux of your task or your intervention. And the percentage is very low of what happens. Then I also would just like to ask the CEO, the Chief Executive Officer, why do you receive a performance bonus while all the other people, it seems to me, the senior people receive performance bonuses? Did they discriminate against you, or what transpired? And just,
you know, you have friends in high places.
You made such a good presentation, logic and everything. I can't believe that this man doesn't receive some sort of a bonus. Also the annual speech with command of what she's doing, and also the annual payment. What is that? What is the ETQA manager? We received 55,000 rand annual payment. No bonus, so we can go and boast. I haven't received the bonus, but then he has received 55,000 rand, which is very much the highest. So if you can just speak a little bit to those speakers, what is that annual payment that is also? Or is that the Christmas 13th check or whatever? And I think the last or second last, page 25 of the slides, if you look at the income in the different provinces and versus the disbursements, it doesn't look too bad, except for KwaZulu-Natal. Terrible
terrible what's going on there. What is the reason? And can you just explain that big difference that is with KwaZulu Natal?
Can I get the question?
Thank you very much for the time. My question is, why this big difference? Why this big difference on KwaZulu Natal? I mean, normally you would find that if there's a problem, it will be more or less in a number of provinces. And if you look at the difference between the blue and the red in the other provinces, it isn't too bad. But once you get to KwaZulu Natal, there is something terribly wrong, which one would like to have explained.
Okay,
thank you, Chair.
Chair, the rest of the questions, Janet will answer. I'll just answer the one. Thank you, Honorable Member. I'm going to claim my performance. Now, on the question of the performance bonus, there was no CEO during that time. I was the leadership manager and acting CEO, so my position there, responsible for development of all these programs. You see that the performance bonus was 63,000, which is not the highest. The highest is the HRM corporate one. But it is the proportion, it was a...
And it's a second
highest. Yes, because the... It's a very good observation that the one part was a proportionate allocation for the acting CEO and the one was the leadership manager performance bonus. So it's put together, so it's reported together. The HRM manager annual payment, and the annual payment will be bonuses, a 13th check. How the CETA does not have annual bonus, but it has a total cost to company, so how people structure that too. They take 11 checks and the 12th one becomes a sort of a bonus. Because it's out of tradition, so you structure them, people build in the savings, there's also a savings to make sure that they get the full pay at the end of, it's about, it's between 1,000 to 2,000, so that by December they get the full pay that's not taxed. So, that the ECTA manager resigned, so the that amount would reflect the total amount payable, including the proportional part of the accrued leave. It's included in that amount. Education, training, quality assurance. Yeah, management. Yeah. Okay. Yes. It's a QA. Thank you. And Saga. And GPLG. So the other questions on the infrastructure, Janet has noted the questions, I'm going to ask you to respond.
I think there were two questions largely which I would like to respond to. The one was the impact of the sector skills plan research. The other was the our interventions in relation to the modernization of infrastructure, etc. In terms of the impact of the research, I would like to, of course, be able to say, well, we've changed the face of local government. I'm afraid that that's probably not the case at all. What I think that one of the most important contributions that we have been able to make is to be able to, and certainly in relation to our interactions, for instance, with DPLG, we sit on many committees, for instance, the skills audit process. Within those environments, what we have been able to do is we have been able to correct a number of misapprehensions, shall we say, about what some of the problems are within local government. There's the CEO alluded to one before, which is there was a very kind of short-sighted focus for instance, on the lack of engineers in the sector, whereas we were able to point out that it is not only the lack of engineers which actually impacts on the service delivery, but it is the fact that you are lacking engineering skills. Municipalities operate as systems, or they become dysfunctional as systems. I think that one of the other contributions that we have been able to make is to focus on the fact that rather than the extremely high vacancy rates being concentrated only at higher occupational levels, one of the key things that we have noticed about municipalities is the fact that their clerical posts and their general worker posts are where they consistently have the highest vacancies. Now, that is not a factor of a skills shortage. I do not know why municipalities do not employ staff in those in those occupational categories, but they do not. And essentially, your clerical and your general workers, those are the people who deliver services to communities. If you do not have guys who pick up the rubbish, you do not have a waste removal strategy. And I think that that is a significant contribution that our research has been able to make. I think that another of the contributions that we've been able to make is to also sit with the skills audit information. And one, to be able to work with DPLG very closely on developing the terms of reference for that skills audit. Secondly, well, aside from the financial contribution that we made, but also stressing the importance of having such a skills audit done in municipalities, I think that that has been a key contribution. I think that our analysis of the kinds of areas of skill scarcity in municipalities has been fairly precise. A lot of the stuff that we're seeing about the lack of engineers, the lack of property valuers, the lack, for instance, of transport planners, that's going to be another one that's going to start entering into the discussions very shortly. These are actually areas of skill scarcity that the local government CETA has in fact identified. We have identified that those areas are lacking. We've developed qualifications, etc., around those particular areas. And in turn, I mean, that has been the heart, or the impact of not having those skills in municipalities has been picked up and discussed within the sector. And much of that has been the product of our research. I think there's a lot more that we could and should be doing. And I'd like to pick up on what the CEO was saying, that in the workshop that we held last in February, this committee actually requested kind of disaggregated or more detailed picture, if you like, of each municipality. And I think that we would very much like to participate in doing that. And maybe we should come and make another presentation like we did at the beginning of this year to this committee, perhaps in February or March of next year. In relation to the infrastructure within the areas, the infrastructure asset maintenance training program and asset management program that the CEO was mentioning, that is being rolled out. The qualification is being developed. The SACRA has agreed to register the unit standards in that qualification. The CETA itself has set aside an amount of about, I think it's about 7.5 million rand. Is it 9.7 million rand to train municipal officials over the next 3 years in infrastructure asset maintenance. What we are not doing, however, is we are not assisting municipalities in the actual mapping of that infrastructure. We're focusing purely on the training, which is our brief. Now, one of the difficulties is a lot of that infrastructure, as you rightly point out, was put down 40, 50 years ago. A number of municipalities actually have no idea where their infrastructure is. The pipes, presumably, the pipes have been lost, or the maps showing the designs for the drainage systems, etc., have been lost. So that is really, I mean, as key as training in infrastructure asset management is, that is one of the key weaknesses within the municipal environment, is the fact that there is such a very weak planning framework. Just down to quite basic stuff, like where are the pipes running? Thank you.
So on the intake of Lennox, Janet, you have to...
Oh, sorry. On the question around the number of learners in the sector. In fact, if you if you have a look at that slide, there's approximately 33% of employees within local government benefit from some form of training. However, a lot of the training is not, it's very piecemeal, it's ad hoc, it doesn't necessarily lead to full qualifications. You find certain categories, of course, benefiting far more than others. One of the key focus areas for training is, in fact, in management and leadership development. So as a sector, training is taking place, but the question is actually what kind of training? And is it really focused on the issues that are affecting municipalities? If we look at the City of Cape Town's annual training report, there are a lot of interventions around, I don't know, stress reduction, this work, one day workshop, and interpersonal skills, etc. Now, all of those are key things. But that doesn't necessarily directly translate to improving service delivery.
So the MOU with DPMG will provide a copy. We will also maybe get you a signed one. We found also that within DPMG, I raised that with the DG, that other directorates did not know about it for some other reason. What we've undertaken to do is, in terms of the MOU, we should have had our quarterly meetings. We've had our meetings with the DG, but they were not MOU-based meetings. So both of us have not fulfilled our mandate or discharge our responsibilities in terms of that MOU. We have, however, where we interact with officials from GPS, we gladly give them the copy, because part of the reason is that we would be approached by Free Basic Services, and the person dealing with public participation is Yusuf now, and then he completely does not know what happens in another territory. Then comes Nogola, the guys on Nogola and Skills Odyssey, it's another, they have and knowledge because they're sitting in the future. But then you'll find the other guys from capacity building, Bongio and the crew. So the part of the MOU was to say is there has to be a single point of entry, single point of exit. We can't be dealing with GPLG as if it's, you know, different departments. We must deal with GPLG as one unit.
So the MOU really clarifies those issues. So, and then we list the projects that we jointly will collaborate on. So we will definitely make sure that you get both electronic copy and the sign. I'll give it to Leland before we leave. KwaZulu-Natal, yes.
In relation, well, the explanation for KwaZulu-Natal is quite simple. The municipalities, they pay their levies, and then last year they actually had one of the lowest submission rates of workplace skills grants, which means that they then forfeit their mandatory grant, which is 50% of all the levies that they pay. The figures, however, for KZN this time next year, when we come and do that presentation, will look considerably different. Last year, I think I'm not sure about it offhand, but I think they had about a 38% submission rate of workplace skills plans. This year, they've in fact gone up to 77%. Northern Cape had 100% submission rate this year. Overall, we in fact had a 92% submission rate of workplace skills plans from municipalities. Countrywide, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Chair, so you also, if you look at the improvement, we'll come to that, Chair. If you look at page 33, the one that was raised on the salaries, you'll see that the performance bonus for KZN is the second lowest. The one issue was, it's issues that we had to deal with. Part of the performance, how we've done our performance management system is linked to the performance of the SITA by department. So, Janet drives certain objectives and its indicators. And learnership in terms of developing learning program, they drive that and quality assurance. But then, the coordination and implementation happens at the provincial level. So you see that there is a great competition between the quantity of WSPs that are submitted, the implementation of those WSP ATR. If there's a low submission rate, the provincial manager also gets penalized because we put in an office there for them to do that. So you see that it's reflected. But also what we did last year, we only had the provincial manager and the assistant. What we've done now with you, yes, okay, yeah. What we've done, we've increased the capacity. We've sat down with the provincial manager. I've sat down with the provincial managers to determine the requisite capacity they need to be able to fulfill some of the functions. So some of them accepted responsibility, and then they did not request resources. So, but we have to penalize somebody because, I mean, if you assume a responsibility, if the boss gives me a task and they don't give me the resources, and I accept that, I'm shooting myself on the foot. So, those things have got to be discussed. So, we've discussed that and we've also increased capacity for the provincial manager. So, that was the one reason, Chair.
The reason I say it's dangerous. I would say that the sustainability of this depends on the continued presence of coordinators who do this kind of thing. Because that's a very serious issue coming from just the way we are looking at it.
So I'm glad you're raising that. Part of our MOU with SAUDA
will be to we are assisting them with the process of establishing exactly what is it that they need to do in this area of skills development.
Well, thereby you are taking over the questions of the president.
Yeah.
What is your role in dealing with it?
Yes.
So it's that question.
No, that's true, Chair. So there are what we call STOs of SAWA. We're now using them, I must be honest. We've agreed on a gentleman's agreement. Skills development officers. So, for instance, as part of research, SAWA has employed skills development officers. What is their role? I think the idea was noble, to get to assist municipalities to comply with, you know, but they're not doing those things. They're doing all sorts of other things other than that. So we had a discussion with the CEO of SAWA to say, we can, from the speaker's point of view, we interview them, we know that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Can we use them? So they've made them available to us in the provinces as an extra resource. What we are then saying, we say we don't want to use SAWA, because SAWA must play its role and the SICA must play its role in the same area, but we need to define that in the MOU. For example, you've included that as part of the areas where we're collaborating with SAWA. However, SAWA has rightly said, we have not defined which space we should occupy in this area. We don't want to overlap. Can you assist us get to that point? So we will finalize this one on the 8th with the CEO. Actually, GDSA agrees to fund the facilitation of that process. Yeah.
Yes, Sir President. I had already noted that, you know, where I located the role of the SICA, and back to the 1998 Presidential Job Summit, on the sectoral challenges. I would believe that in that process you will like identify the challenges that are faced by a sector, a local government sector. Because if you don't do that, I mean, everyone, whatever submission they make, it's like you make excuses. The very issue of capacity building. I want to just use one example. The issue of, and maybe Chairperson suggests also if there's anything that the SICA will do on the property rights field implementation. Because we still have that challenge that even the GPLG has got to give us a report in terms of implementation levels in municipalities. And the excuse has been that they don't have capacity. So this excuse that within the very engineering, whereas we make understand that there's a need for engineers, whereas the engineering skill, which does not in any way mean necessarily qualified engineers. So I think
okay. I guess that would be the point you are raising. Thank you.
cumulative amount, so it's for, it will end up being 450 property valuers. And in addition to that, we are also placing municipal property valuer interns in selected municipalities. And there are 30, there will be, overall, there will be approximately 120 interns as well.
That's why it's made, I'm doing it
on
behalf.
Yeah, yeah, correct. Yeah, I can't just compromise that. That's one addition because we also deal with it. The other one that I've been raising, and I think it's also a challenge. You said, you know, we have come a long way with traditional leaders, and we know that they are the ones who have insisted that they be trained and capacitated. The last proposal, and we are restating it, that is that can DPLG identify all acts we have passed and highlight the relevant section that has reference to traditional leaders, and the report in terms of how their capacity as well as their weak points, so that they can be addressed through training and all those things. So I'm just thinking, because this is tantamount to exactly what you're saying in the property risk. Thank you. We as members of parliament now, we are preparing ourselves in terms of visits to schools. So wherever we are, you know, we don't have to keep quiet in terms of how do our creators access whatever good things you have coming your way in terms of opportunities, learnerships, and so that we then access that information that we can all use. And lastly, Jefferson, size, fortunately, I also sit in transport. I just remind the Jefferson that the day size, because they have to come and present to Jeremy, that maybe local government, ourselves be invited.
Well, so
that
we call them to come here.
Okay. they are very clear.
Thank you.
they develop because of working with global authorities. A series of training programs with these colleges. And the athlete is that all this kind of goals that a counselor plays. It's a fascinating package of training for counselors. Now, I've had this comment before that our tennis is an athlete. We want to where the world has been about and we've been dealing with some of these issues. We're going to discover that what we thought the issues today, we've done elsewhere before, we've been bad. So, part of what I'm saying is, what is the degree of collaboration that exists between ourselves in the sector with areas like those? The United States said to be with us. They recognize the role of the community as being absolutely great. And one of the things about it is that it also impacts on sustainability, issues of sustainability, because of the risky comprehensive program. The settlements are only settlements because they see heavy governance. So it would be useful to know what kind of collaboration is there. So, the reason I'm raising is as an example of the reporting requirements that we have in the very international agreement that we have over which we need an extremely corporate policy. We can talk about it. What is that great space? There might be a great one as framework, so obviously we love that. In some instances, we do have the unique experiences and challenges that we don't have elsewhere. But in some of the things that have been done, very innovative things, there are really all this huge model is in form of partnership with them, and to what extent, not only have my the others in terms of about it. So,
we do get a lot of requests for collaboration. Currently, we collaborating with GTZ. Particularly in this area of public participation. They play a very big role there. We had Australian Oz 8 in the initial stages with the development of curriculum that the agreement phased out. But we do get a lot of requests now from government departments. We find that public works, we're having a meeting, or supposed to have a meeting with the DGI. I heard over the news that he's left. But we get
public works.
Of draft, Department of Water Affairs. And
yes.
We do have approaches now from Department of Housing, specifically around specific competencies that want us to develop around that area, human settlement, issues of social housing, and the education, managing the education around it. Because there are certain issues like around social housing which are not well received in our traditional townships as a way to go. So we're looking at advocacy programs around that, looking at it, and of course the issues of putting together social compacts in housing. So we are driving qualifications. Department of Transport, greater collaboration there. And our view, Chair, maybe as I'm listening to the Department of Water Affairs, rightfully so, because of the Water Services Act and the establishment of these new water service authorities. We have particular challenges where they are redeploying retired people to municipalities, people who will be retiring very soon. There's no sustained capacity. So we have to deal with that. But what we are saying, the same with National Treasure, we find that there was a contestation between National Treasure and GPLG around the issues of municipal finance management. And our view is that as a CETA, our preference is that we align ourselves with GPLG. We don't want to be hopping around with all the departments. But currently, when people come with approaches, we can't say, no, sorry, we work for GPLG. So what we are trying to push now, and I said to the DG, through foresight, then GPLG should coordinate all sectoral or line functions of other departments, things that come to local government through GPLG. And even if they have to set up a whole directorate for that, so be it. Because it will make everybody's work so easy.
Yeah.
Municipalities get confused. Everybody approaches them to do whatever, including ourselves, and they really don't like it. So that, to me, that's, I'm saying, what you are raising makes sense, but we need a single point of entry also to say, you know, this is the key department that deals with local government. Perhaps here I need to, in the end, we just indicate what we search for SAGA, our view, and we had an honest a discussion with the Meta Trust, and they said, criticize us. What is it that we are not doing right? What is it that we should be doing? We said, as a speaker, we shouldn't be driving the research agenda of local government. We feel that it is SAGA's responsibility. SAGA should be a repository of knowledge, because they represent local government, or organize local government. So anybody who wants anything should be saying, let's go to SAGA.
Yeah.
And that I think that's where the strength should be. However, we will get there. But unfortunately, we always say also to people, criticize us, but we will also give you in this whole area of collaboration, how we think we can best leverage on each other's capacity or skill. It's good that we are doing it now, but it's part of our legislative mandate to do a research, to have a basis. But I don't think we do it to the extent that SAGA could do it. Yeah.
How do we relate those issues of water as a city? We have to take a look at the rate of the local government. But we don't have the good LHC that is not to ensure that. So, somehow, we have to do that. We need to discuss. Okay, how do we synchronize all these data issues so that there is the right and wrong sort of evidence? So, this a long chain of communication, so it's not being effective, so it's in their part. I think that at all levels, even from the portfolio community of the department, there's a need to see that in this
instance. I'm not going to use the private observation. This is the mindset that informs those sort of things.
Indirectly, in fact, this is our head. This is who is important.
What you want this position?
What you want to do with this?
So it creates the problem of saying we are part of the same system. How do we impact on each other? And how can we therefore use the social common agenda to best make the best impact? And this is what is not happening. So when we find a range to create this issue, but also we want your continued training agenda. In the people come out of the things, if also are going to go things like that, then you have a problem. Because some of you do not need anybody's education. You know that it's your wife impacts on the other sector. So you must go out to check how they can contribute or how you can contribute to their status. So it's that component of integration. It's part of the government mandate. The IDP is about integration. We don't need anybody else to be demanding us about that. We must act like this. If it's not between the performance management system, the people who can be asked for the basis of the integration amongst other things, then it won't happen. Thank you very much.
Sir, can I make something
here
for Professor Akadek?
Yes.
You're raising from from a local practitioner and the local government. Because we find it that we can propose every year to be opposed to the demarcation that is spread around. The key driver
is the national political. The logic is that you say you have to align the state has to make a social. That's why. It's not entirely correct, because the system mandate should also be able to do anything that's outside. There's no guarantee that employers of the electricity will like what education offers and will keep them in and so on. So there are many arguments as well. But the issue is, in the domain of public, that when the public has a domain, nobody is telling them that we should be very close to serving that about what role would governments, when is demarcating CPAPs, what, where do you locate the government related center education authority? Noting that government participation includes development before most of them. That's a point that I raised to the military and to school and expect that to exist. So I'm worried that going forward, we find that also within the department, and you will find the new security that's not informed by it. So our view, we were thinking that maybe perhaps the relevant center we're looking for all the time, just to get all the time. We're looking at each other. Perhaps at the line departments, you know, line departments that support the politics, but they align themselves with the work of the system and try to understand more, you know, what this system is about, and how they can maybe their own center. Yeah. Eventually, what turned out to be, it could be one thing that has happened, but we need to come up with a behavior much more correlated that would assist governments within our own country. That's a key challenge that we have. Maybe we can also analyze it. It's a concern, but if it's criticism, we want to look at what they say, we criticize what we have a suggestion to make. But it is important to make it that we can do it.
You were just saying earlier on the heading, you express those views better for us. We were just complaining earlier on in the morning that some people are very quiet and shy and play safe from communicating views that emanate from their experience. It helps us to understand what those people may have views as well. So the more you can do that, the better it will help us in our interaction with our other colleagues.
My understanding of the Russia we have is still disabled. There was a resolution that there will be certain other than certain purposes that agreed to implement the presidential consultation. And our exactly locating it is in the New York and the table. For instance, I'm facing myself, then I saw it through that group of the institutions. You see, South are supposed to call a home place as a center. But now, there's a center in both South are only to be selected. And I have an exact referring to that. Now, because I attended the university of the Latin, which I believe takes that form. And I would say it began what we did. It was difficult to discuss the personal challenges as they relate to capacity. There is no way that even the very products we are having would address significantly they would be tailored to student situation. Because the environment would really be different.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your input. Appreciate that. Secondly, we have some people who are so much. I want to thank you for accepting that. I'm very happy to be here. The spirit of my group was mentioned here. I ended up giving a very nice last night. So, you know, it was nice. I was repeating the meeting. So, it was all here. No, thank you very much.
I want to say to
And whether the relationship less than for itself or for anything becomes forever its own and its own self. When I talk to him, maybe we have more problems. This is more priority.
I was training, I was training, I was training.